With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Beyond Tech Chef podcast. I'm Haley Strong. Welcome. We're here to talk about a serious matter today, and I'm joined by a very serious panel of guests. Kurt Clark, hello.
Hello, Haley. I appreciate you inviting me to join you this Saturday.
Thank you. Mike Bloom, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Good job, Mike. We are very impressed at your ability to speak quietly.
You can do it. See?
He's like straining, though. Can you tell?
Yeah.
He's like, hello.
He's going to explode later.
Emily Fox, you as well are here.
Yes, I am. Hello.
I'm going to smell a candle real quick. Oh, very nice.
Vanilla?
It's called Spritz, and it's sweet orange and vanilla. It's very nice.
Oh, that sounds really refreshing.
And it's funny. I very rarely burn candles. I just like open them and smell them.
I'm a candle aficionado, and I found that, yeah, oftentimes it's just the non-lit candles. That's where you get the smell. Like lighting the candle doesn't really do much.
Yeah. A candle's an investment. They're not cheap.
No, they're not.
This one was $12 Canadian.
That's like 60 American.
Are we just skipping past the fact that Haley opened up our food podcast by smelling a candle?
An orange and vanilla candle, though.
Yeah.
So it is brutal.
I suppose so. It is. It's food related.
My favorite candle is, and I am pining to be a candle fluencer, is the Bath and Body Works French Baguette candle.
It will
change your life.
It smells like freshly baked bread.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Makes me want to cry every time I open it just to smell it.
There's a candle shop in Neenah, Wisconsin. And I only know that because I used to go there all the time for work, that it was like all soy candles, and they came in tins, and they were arranged. They looked like tin cans that you would see like in a produce section, almost like canned food, but there was and they all smelled like different foods. And there was a baked bread one that smelled very much like
that I ate.
Fresh, that I ate. They asked me never to return.
I do think that I am drawn towards like the food centric candles. Another one of my favorite ones is pumpkin pecan waffles, wax melter. That's blueberry cheesecake that I love. And then one of my favorite kitchen candle that I keep beside the microwave is lemongrass lime, which is also kind of food. Ooh, right?
I'm really into that.
Yeah, it's nice.
So I recently came into some tallow. Just straight tallow in a jar.
Whenever people use that phrase, I always mean it to imply that like someone died and bequeathed it to you in their will.
So
they gave you tallow from their body.
From their body, yeah. So my grandmother recently passed away. I'm kidding. So I got some tallow in a CSA box and also a jar of lard. Okay.
Yes, of course. So, are you going to make a pie crust?
Well, yes, absolutely. I keep trying to think what would I use lard for, since I never seek lard otherwise. So I think a pie crust is in order, probably maybe like some tamales, maybe some sort of tortilla situation, because I have a tortilla press.
Do you have a tortilla chip press?
I do.
Okay, cool. It's called a pot and the tallow, probably.
But I have tallow, and I was like, what do I do with with tallow, and my mom was like, you should make candles. What if I made my own scented food candle?
I think that's a great idea.
That is the representation of what quarantine has been like in 2020, where it's like a combination of all hobbies into one thing. If you specifically make like a bread scented candle.
And I'll make it tie-dyed, right? Like I'll tie-dye the candle and make it a sourdough scent. And I'll sell it and the proceeds will go to some worthy cause for justice of some capacity. I think that's how we bundle this, and I'll light it every time there is an election discussion. How about that?
So you're gonna burn it within like 5 hours?
I think you have to work in a Zoom sound bath in there, and then you're good.
No, I'll record myself lighting it, and then send everybody the video of it.
What does a Zoom sound bath consist of? Is it just a looping of somebody being like, "Oh, you're muted. You need to unmute yourself."
Do you want me to go get my singing bowl right now, Mike Bloom?
Oh, no. No. Well, let's, instead of taking out the singing bowl, we can either sing the praises or, in maybe some of our cases, perhaps malign the one and only character that is Mr. Guy Fieri on today's episode of Beyond Top Chef. We brought it up last week when we sort of did our potluck. We knew we couldn't do that without Haley Strong. You are one of the biggest Guy Fieri fans that I have ever known, and I think in preparation, I know some of us have watched some of his work, some of us have certain thoughts about his work, but I feel like Haley is like the resident, you know, guy expert here. I would love to hear like when you started watching him and what you love about him through all these years, because he's been on TV for like going on 2 decades right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm like a day one fan. I didn't watch him on Food Network Star or anything. But I'd say it started about 10 years ago at this point. And I feel like I've gone through the ebbs and flows of Guy Fieri fandom. And I've always remained true as a fan. There was a period in time where people were anti-Guy Fieri, and now we're kind of coming back into it. And maybe not Kurt. Kurt and I may not leave this podcast on good terms. I'm just putting that out there. But when I finished university, I came home and I took about a year off just to reset. And I would often watch Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives with my dad. We'd have a great time. He worked shift
work. Quadruple D then.
Yeah.
Quadruple D's dad.
I can tell it's early because I'm like, huh?
And he worked a lot of shift work. So when he was on afternoons, we'd sit there in the morning with a glass of chocolate milk in our hands, watching, you know, hours of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
A beautiful memory you just painted. That made me really, really feel sentimental.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying like not to cry, honestly, because like Emily, you mentioned before we started recording, but you've had like kind of an up and down week. Like I also have. And so I'm just like in an emotional state. Now I'm going to start crying. I'm legitimately.
Oh my God.
No.
No. Don't cry. Only happy tears for Flavortown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I just love Guy Fieri so much.
Like we could distill those tears into a sauce.
I feel like I need to leave the podcast now.
Kurt, do you have anything positive to say? Because otherwise, I'm not there for it.
Sorry, literally yesterday, my parents moved out of the house that like I would sit on the couch and watch.
I'm just going to play the role of the $50,000 patron and watch this one and not have to say anything. I know I had great times with my grandmother watching Guy's Grocery Games, you know, Quadruple G. So now I'll hold off on sharing my thoughts at appropriate times.
Yeah, I'll just keep going. So I just have had a great time watching it over the years, and I love the show. And there's been a couple times where I've been on trips in the States, and I've actively seeked out like a Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives restaurant, and I've had a great time doing that. And it's just something that's kind of really like is a nice time for my family to watch this show. We all like, that's the kind of food we like. That's the kind of food my dad likes. And we just like watching it, and it's just comforting because you know exactly what to expect from the show. And I love the whole Guy empire of TV shows. And I think people often see this Guy Fieri as a character and don't really look past that into all that he does. So one of those things that has really touched me over the years is that he had a sister who was a part of the LGBTQ plus community, and she passed away. And to honor her, he got ordained and officiated 100 weddings for LGBTQ people.
Oh yeah, that was Art Smith, I think, was part of that throng of couples, I believe.
Yeah. And so that's really nice. With the California wildfires, I believe last year he really put some fundraising efforts into action. At the beginning of all of the COVID stuff, he worked hard to get restaurant people kind of on their feet again. So I just love Guy Fieri. I love the shows. I love that I can just turn on the Food Network at any point and watch Guy's Grocery Games or Diners, Drive-Ins and Dives or Guy's Big Bite or Guy's Ranch Spectacular or anything and just like feel warm and comfortable.
Now, is Guy's Ranch Spectacular? How many of us thought she was referring to a place and how many of us thought she was referring to an ingredient? When you think Guy's Ranch Spectacular, like what's the first thing you think of?
Frosted ranch tips.
I will save my thoughts on Guy's Ranch Kitchen for the appropriate moment. But I'm very familiar with Guy's Ranch Kitchen because it's because I watched an episode last weekend.
Well, so Haley, I have not chocolate milk theme memories, but certainly like Diners, Drive-Ins and Dives is actually a pretty like big family show in my family as well. Like it'd be one of those things where like on a Friday night, there was always a marathon on because legitimately this show is like to the Food Network what Ridiculousness is to MTV to a certain extent, where it's not going to be playing 23 out of 24 hours of the day, but like it's going to be a good chunk of it because I think we talked about what it's like 31 seasons at this point. So like there's just so many episodes that you can throw them on there.
I added Triple D to my DVR. So that's
And it immediately filled up with 350 hours.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Like I think by that was like Saturday and like by Monday, I feel like there were like easily 17 episodes in there.
Yeah. So it was something that like you would just pop it on a Friday night and just watch a bunch to the point where actually I think a couple of restaurants, I believe in my hometown, were covered on Triple D. And that's a lot of fun. I'm excited to talk about Guy Fieri because, yeah, particularly like the meta narrative on him has been super interesting where like, I think he has sort of been boiled down to represent like everything that's wrong with, with like the economization of the culinary scene and like, selling out, quote unquote. Obviously, there was, I think, I'm trying to remember, maybe like 8 years ago. Yeah. In 2012, there was that infamous review of Guy's American Kitchen and Bar, which has been pegged as like one of the most scathing, not only food reviews, but just regular reviews in the publication's history. But I also, to Haley's point, I don't know, I've been seeing a lot of discourse or like in the advents of think pieces about like, yeah, I think we like, let's leave this guy alone. Cause I think if he's nothing but passionate. And again, I think where that passion is directed is going to depend on your own personal taste level. But like, to your point, Haley, not just being a good humanitarian, like what he brings to his franchises might not be everyone's cup of tea, but like he is still brewing that tea, and he's going to put every ounce of effort into each leaf.
And he's always a little bit of donkey sauce. And sure, this isn't everyone's taste. Chain restaurants aren't everyone's taste. But the thing is, and how I approach food is that it's just kind of like, who gives a fucking shit? Because everyone has to eat. We all like, not everyone loves eating, and but I do. And Guy Fieri makes food fun, and it feels accessible. He's going, in Triple D, he's going to restaurants that you'd find around the corner and making those things accessible to you. And it's fun. It should be fun. And this is all bullshit. Guy Fieri rules.
Oh boy.
No, I think
I'm done. I'm leaving. That's my piece.
Don't go. So I think for a long time I had a bias, and over the years, I've been with Josh for 14 years. Over the years, this man will turn the TV on, and there might be a marathon going on. Might be Triple D. Might be I don't know, man versus food. It might be Beef Bobby Flay. But this is how Josh unwinds. A man who works in TV, who watches TV, who analyzes TV, who is the TV sometimes. It just feels like he turns into it. He likes to still partake in the act of relaxing in front of a TV, but there needs to be sort of like a very easy, digestible program in front of him, or it's like a really cool thriller or whatever. But when it comes to a really long day where he's just like consumed all of the media and like produced however many articles and, you know, all the stuff that Josh does, sometimes he just needs a break. And Triple D has been like this really incredible crossroads for us where I've been like, oh man, you're going to put that on? Come on. Like, let's watch something else. Like, let's do something, blah, 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 blah. But after a while, I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but as you age, a Friday night is no longer a Friday night that it was in your 20s. A Friday night is typically like you sit down on the couch and you're like, I'm exhausted. I might fall asleep on this because this has been a long week.
That was my 20s.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm in my 20s and that sounds very familiar.
Like, you know, like you used to be like, oh man, Friday night, where are we going? It was like, we're going to hit the town. And now it's like, ah, oh, Friday night. Let me unbutton my pants and sit on the couch and like watch something that like is so easy to watch and so enjoyable and engaging, but not too engaging, like not too stimulating. And like,
you can watch one episode or you can watch like 50. Like I can put Triple D on as I'm going to bed and like fall asleep to the dulcet tones of Guy Fieri.
Yeah. And like, so we've become sort of way more well-versed in it over the years. And I also think that the production value of it has gotten better. I think that they've worked really hard to kind of engage a lot of different types of restaurants. It's not as cut and dry as it used to be. I think it's become more multidimensional, which I think is great. But like, it's still the same thing. It's formulaic. You know, you're going to get him in like, you know, his like hot rod or whatever the hell he drives at the beginning and the end.
I am always so scared that he's going to hit something.
He's like definitely on a trailer being like dragged, I think, on some of
them. I don't know. I feel like we see the front of the car and unless they like CGI it out, I feel like they just usually reserve like a patch of street to be like, okay, guy, you're going to drive down here. And again, like, I don't think he's going to hit other cars, but I'm just worried he'll like accidentally steer and hit a fire hydrant while he's talking to the camera.
Yeah. But like, so we've come to enjoy it and we've grown into it. And then like we had a really interesting discourse about it maybe like 5 or 6 years ago where Josh was like, listen, he gets a lot of crap, but I just want to say no one can do this job better than he can. He's very good at his job. Look at how he hosts. Look at how he brings people together. Look how he can have these conversations that are both very, very easy seemingly, but also he has a lot of knowledge about food and how things are prepared and, you know, oh, you're going to do this now. That's great. Oh, you're going to put this together. Awesome. I've never had something exactly like this before. And I've been to this, 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 and this, and I can compare these different experiences, right? He's not just like, well, that looks like a huge tamale. Like, I think there's like a lot of other food shows that have tried to emulate sort of a Triple D feel.
Oh, yeah.
And the people that they fucking cast, sorry, F-bomb. The people.
No, we're all out. Sorry, children. Yeah. You are not listening to this episode. We listening. Are going all out today.
But like the people that they put in who are supposed to have sort of like the freestyle chill vibe of like, yeah, let's like hit up these carnival eats or like, I don't know, like
that guy also hosts The Bachelorette Canada.
Really?
Interesting.
So that's the thing, though, to Emily's point, like it's not specifically a food personality. It's more so like personality first and food second. And I agree. I watched a couple of episodes of Triple D in preparation for this. And something that I really got, especially as someone who, you know, has really gone into interviewing as part of his career, is like how, to your point and to Josh's point, he actually does kind of make it look easy. Like, I can imagine how uncomfortable it must be for these restaurateurs to be like, okay, we're going to have this camera crew in our kitchen trying to prep things and not be as awkward as possible. And again, say what you want to about the way the guy looks and the thing that he exudes, but he is able to like bring in a casual energy that I think does bring down people's possible anxieties. Like the episode that I saw, he was having a ball with this restaurateur who was like, you know, making Jack Black references and like giving sass back to him. So like he clearly has that tone and that energy to him in the person that really says, like, yeah, listen, I know that this is for a food show that could bolster your business, but like, we're just having a good time. Show me how your biggest recipe is made, and I'll compliment your food no matter what.
Yeah. And I think he has an ease about him that I think makes a lot of people who are not used to being on camera much more comfortable and capable of explaining stuff. Right. Like, I actually have a friend who's a chef whose restaurant got featured on it. And he hardly even got a chance to be on camera because I guess the owner was like, I would like to be the one explaining all of this. But like, of course. They were like, he was awesome. Like, he just came in. He was very cool, very easygoing, like happy to get it done. You know, he likes to sit with the people that are there. It's usually a curated group of people that are attendees during the filming who are in like the dining area and eating. But, you know, he doesn't bring a lot of pretense to it, I think, in ways that maybe other hosts would. So that's refreshing to me. I don't know.
So, Kurt, I really am curious because I am so clouded in my judgment of Guy Fieri. And you and our group team over the last week or so, you have maybe not been as complimentary to the TV stylings of Guy Fieri as we are. Like, was this week your first experience watching any of these shows? Like, had you seen them before? Like, what? Like, tell me how you missed this.
So my first exposure to Guy Fieri was probably his New York Times Square restaurant. I think I was there for business, and it was fine. I didn't hate it. And then I think my second exposure was Guy's Burger Joint on a Carnival cruise line. Good burgers, especially in poolside, chilling out, all good. So, but the first time I ever watched Guy on TV was Tournament of Champions this year. I've never, I just knew of him. I think he occasionally appears in one of my K-cups. He's got like a K-cup coffee line as well.
Can I ask, Kurt, outside of like Top Chef and the stuff that you just checked out last week, are you a big food television show person?
I'm a more of a... No, I would say no. I think the post season coverage, like I've done Cutthroat Kitchen. I like the competition shows. I don't like watching Padma's show and watching Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat is off the radar for what I would normally attend. One of the show I watch Street Food Asia on Netflix instead of Latin America as one of our things that we didn't get to discuss last week. And it's not the sort of shows I typically watch. So I think that's how I missed Triple D. Mm-hmm. So the very first episodes of Triple D and Guy's Grocery Games that I've ever seen were this past weekend. And I think I watched like three of each and they were not for me. And at least with Triple D, I think I can chalk it up to a few things. One is, well, I like the concept of if you're in this city, check out this place. In fact, one of the three episodes I watched, they typically what they feature like three different restaurants.
Yeah, they do like four acts with three different restaurants. One of them makes like two dishes, I think.
Yeah. And so of the nine restaurants I saw from the complete catalog of seasons, one of them was in Chicago that I actually have been to. And so, and they highlighted the fish, which I didn't get when I was there. But I guess for me, especially maybe now watching it in COVID, is like a there's such a backlog. Like I would normally watch a show like this to see what places should I check out when visiting a particular city. But this kind of comes at it from the other way for me. It's like I'm not going to be in Austin, Denver, or Salt Lake City anytime in the near future. So this really doesn't interest me. I would watch this from a very utilitarian curiosity perspective of, oh, I want to check that out. And I think it's such a huge backlog also, like there's no easy way to say, oh, I'm going to be in Austin. What are all of the places in Austin that Triple D has ever highlighted? Maybe that's, I didn't research any Triple D websites to see if that's the case. So that's one thing. Two things. It's the fact there's such a huge backlog, a back catalog, and the fact that it's just not relevant to me and it's hard to make it relevant to me. And then there's Guy. And the three episodes I saw, I felt like he was pulling spotlight from the restaurants. And that was kind of irritating to me to watch. Was like I was like it seemed like he would be asking questions in order to lead to him to be able to deliver some sort of canned line. So I didn't care for his hosting style in the three episodes I watched. guy at grocery games. And for this, like, and that's more like, I do like the competition shows. And for that one is like, I also like structure to my competition shows. And there's like zero structure. Like sometimes it was like three people competing. Sometimes it was pairs of two sometimes. And maybe again, just the three episodes I watched. And I kind of got the same, like, look at me, perspective, like feel from Guy's Grocery Games. Surprisingly, I really enjoyed Guy's Ranch Kitchen. It was only because it taped one episode, and the episode had what's the chef, Art?
Art Smith.
Maybe not Art Smith then. But it had like Rocco Despirito and Mark Murphy and several other chefs, like all kind of cooking their own like versions of comfort food. And he was kind of moderating that. And that he seemed to take a little bit of a step back and to kind of, in my mind, respect the chefs and respect the dishes more. And I feel like I got more out of that. It also wasn't like this manic MTV style of editing. It was a little bit more like what I'm used to. And maybe that's just what it is. It's just, I don't have the history with this show, and maybe just the smorgasbord of like the six episodes in total I watched of Triple G and Triple D. But for me, it wasn't so much Guy that was taking me out of it as like, these are just shows that I'm not getting anything out of.
It's interesting that you bring up for you when it comes to like the travel cooking shows, that it's about like, not necessarily highlighting the restaurants, but being like, oh, I should check that place out. Because I guess as someone who doesn't travel much and doesn't really want to travel, like, I don't watch the show for that reason whatsoever.
Well, I see what you're saying. And yeah, for me, it's like, I don't want to, with a cooking competition show, oh, this is an interesting dish. And you get a little bit of a sense of, I could try something similar. But this is really about, and this is great. I think it's highlighting like the local restaurant and why you should potentially go there. But for me, it's like, well, I'm never going to be in Arlington, Virginia in the near future. And I don't have and it's not really about, here's how you could make this or anything instructional like that. And it's not a competition. So for me, it served no useful purpose for me because I don't have that history with it as a comfort show. And to be fair, like even Street Food Asia, which was a lovely, wonderfully crafted set of stories, is I went into it thinking that, okay, we're going to learn about, you know, Taiwanese street food, or we're going to learn about Vietnamese street food. And I was really kind of interested in like learning about that variety, but it focused on the individual, each episode focuses on the individual story of one street food vendor, which it was wonderfully told and wonderfully shot, but that's not what I went to the series looking for. So I think it's also a little bit about like what I look for in food shows and like Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. I actually enjoyed that more than Padma's show, because it provided more practical advice to me. I liked Padma because there was still stuff there that I could relate to, because it was more of an overview of a cuisine and a culture. But yeah, I think it's just because the Triple D focuses so much in on, I think, specific venues, and it's not and they're not places that I really plan on going or being able to check out. Mm. And it's not set up in a way for me to easily, like, fine, well, where are all the places in LA? At least these places I could check out. I just didn't get much out of it.
I think that's fair. I totally understand that you would probably be more drawn to a competition reality show.
Yeah.
And I obviously love competition reality shows, but when I come home from a long night at work and I've talked to 4 billion people about fish and chips and chicken tenders, like, I don't want to, like, Top Chef or Big Brother is not something I can watch unwind. Like, I turn on, you know, a Triple D, or lately, like, any of like the British game shows we like to watch, you know, just that's kind of it's like the peacefulness of it.
Mm. Yeah. And I agree with Kurt's point though about the organization of the shows, because you find that especially when you binge a bunch of them, that I think unlike Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat or Padma's show, which focuses around like a specific location or a specific type of food, it is scattered to winds. I mean, it's probably always going to probably revolve around some sort of like fried food. Like, you're not really going to get a lot of salads on Triple D. But yeah, like, there, he does so much globetrotting, quite literally, that, like, if you are looking for, oh, I want to find a place to eat in Austin, it's tough to find, because you're going to have to, like, well, I can find the middle third in episode 13, but then I'm going to have to take the first third of episode 26 to find another place. Like, it's very clear that they just sort of, like, decided to mishmash. Like, even the episodes don't really have a theming title to them. So, to Haley's point, like, I think the organization is not something that they're focusing on. But I think also, to Kurt's point, that could be a detractor if that's what you're into with these shows.
Yeah, the food I saw cooked was like, I would definitely try that. And I think it just added to my frustrations. Like, I'm not going to be, I would have, if I could have seen, like, in the listing of 17 episodes, you know, Chicago, like, oh, have I been to those places? What does it say? And I thought, it turned out one actually was, or like, this is the, here's a Los Angeles episode. But again, that's just, I'm also a little bit, it's like, I'm trying to get kind of utilitarian purpose and, like, what can I pull out of this that I can actually experience?
Do you think if we were living in a time in which we were not confined to the four walls of our homes, and that, you know, going places, if you had stuff on your agenda, like, hey, I am going to Austin soon, and you happen to watch an episode, like, do you think you would enjoy that more? Like, do you think you would have enjoyed it more if it was open to you, if you did have a trip plan? Because, like, the way I went to one of the Triple D restaurants was that I had a trip planned to Chicago, and I just happened to turn on an episode, and there was a restaurant in Chicago that was in Wrigleyville, and it was a burger restaurant, and I thought that sounded delicious, so we ended up going when we were there. I wrote it down, we found the address, et cetera, et cetera.
Was it DMK Burger Bar?
I think it was, actually. Yeah, now that I think of it, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. Let me type that into my little machine, DMK Burger Bar.
I see what you're getting at. I think for me, it's just, again, the fact that, and that was like a, because I was like a very serendipitous, like, mishmash of, I'm going to Chicago, oh, there's a Chicago episode.
But I feel like you could turn it on at any point and, like, watch it for a couple hours and be like, oh, I am going to this place soon, let me just write it down. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't always happen, like, I'm searching through the episodes for this, or we kind of have our own version of Triple D here. What is it called? You Gotta Eat Here, and it's not hosted by Guy Fieri, but it's always fun.
Like, Bachelor Canada guy.
It's like patisseries, poutineries, and just a Triple P. I'm trying to think of a third one.
Gosh, pancakes.
Pancakes.
Oh, maple syrup.
Yeah.
So it's always, I do love that. Like, oh, I might be going to the city soon, so let me write this down. Or I've been to that restaurant. Like, that's fun. So I do get that from Triple D too. It's like, oh, like, you know, when they're going to Buffalo, like, I think that's fun. Or, you know, even when they go, like, there's been a couple episodes in Italy, and it's like, oh, like, that's so fun to watch. I'm not going to Italy soon, but, like, I love thinking about it and seeing it and seeing all of the options.
I think we learned during the BuzzFeed quiz that I'm a planner. And, yeah. and for me, for example, like, I'm going to go to, let's say, Fargo. What I will do is then I will search the internet for potential. I'll see where I'm staying. I'll search Google Maps for, like, interesting sounding restaurants in that area. I will search for Fargo escape rooms. So it's like, I will use the internet to search after I've found, versus hoping to just, like, turn on an episode and see if there's something potentially relevant there. But that's what I'm saying. Like, if there was, like, and maybe there is, and actually, you know what, when I'm done talking, I will search for it. Maybe there is a Guy's or a Triple D, yeah, a repository of search by place. That's something I'm going to check out now after I hand off the mic to somebody else. But, that's more how I would, you know, see something. It's like, we know, I have goldfish brain when it comes to a lot of these shows. So it's like, it's especially now in COVID, so maybe that's a difference. I have fewer plans to travel right now. So as places come up, they're not sticking in my head in terms of hanging a hook on that, saying, I'm going to go there, I'm going to try this place. But even just the episodes I saw, it was just the places are, like, also so scattered and so random. Like, the odds of me planning a trip to, like, I've been to Austin once in my life, and this is an Austin episode, or one of the things was in Austin. So it's like, I don't have any plans on going there in the near future. It's not going to stick. That's just my search algorithms for travel and food.
I think it's been interesting for me to watch just because there's so many eggs and everything. Like, everything's deep fried. Like, I have a really hard time being like, oh, I would eat that because I can't. But I still enjoy watching the process of it. And obviously, that's coming from me having like a culinary brain. So like, that's part of it. But I really do enjoy being like, whoa, look at that thing that I can't eat. What's that like? Like, let's talk to the people who do eat it. What are they talking about? What are they saying it tastes like? So for me, it's more of like a voyeuristic kind of excuse, I guess.
That's kind of how I feel, but not like so eggy. But it's like oh, I would love to go to Brandon, South Dakota. What fun!
Yeah. Well, then I have learned a few things where it's worked to my advantage. So we go to this lobster like seafood shack on our way up to Maine, and it's like part of our trip. We always stop there either on the way up or on the way back. And I'm able to eat the lobster roll there because they make one that's a Connecticut style. So they'll just put butter on it rather than mayo. But they always have fried clams. And in Guy's episode where he covers everything, he talks about how they make two different kinds, one that's breaded with egg and one that isn't. And so I learned that from Guy and then could go there and be like, hi, I would like these fried clams, please. And it was so exciting for me because usually I can't eat fried clams. So like, there are small little tidbits of things that I've learned over the years where I'm like, oh my God, I can eat that. That's so exciting. We should go. COVID obviously puts a bit of a damper on some of this stuff. But like, for me, it's more, I like to see and experience it maybe through the eyes of the TV because it's not going to happen for me in real life. So for me, it works as an advantage rather than sort of a deterrent.
And now we're going to take a quick break from the Top Chef kitchen to hear a word from our sponsors.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
We've talked a lot about Triple D. What do we think about, Kurt pointed out, Guy's Grocery Games before? Because I'm actually more inclined to agree with him about Guy's Grocery Games in that, I don't know, the couple of episodes that I've watched, the challenges have seemed so scattershot that it feels less like a show like Chopped, which has like, okay, the ingredients will be different very many times, and more so like, here's all the hoops you can jump through in this set that is decorated to look like a grocery store.
I mean, I watched Triple G the other night, and it was like couples doing it. And like, one couple was a chef and the other was the one sent out to get all of the ingredients. And it was sort of a riff on like, when you are the primary cook in the household and you send your significant other out to the grocery store, they always come back with the wrong stuff. And like, that was sort of like the underlying like joke of it all. And like, I was like, it's funny, but not, because this is like everyone's reality. Sorry, Josh. But but it was actually pretty funny because like, you see everybody else like on camera being like, I said steak and you brought back pork. And they're like, well, I don't know. It said pork steaks. And it's like, you know, and there's like another woman that's like, I don't know. There's like 10 different kinds of milk. Which milk do I pick? And like, so it was kind of fun to watch it from that perspective and then see them jump in as sort of a sous chef to assist once all the ingredients came back. And then seeing all the judges like kind of crack up and be like, yeah, this is a reality for a lot of people when you like have to kind of work with what you've been given. But yeah, I think that there are a lot of moments where the structure of that show is all over the place. Like, sometimes they're like, okay, we're going to have celebrities come on. And the celebrities are like, I've never done anything like this before. And you're like, why are you on the show? Like, why did you say yes?
See, I love that it's like that. Yeah. Because then I just... I never know what to expect when I turn it on, and it's always fun. I don't know. I think I like a little more chaotic energy than Kurt does.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Oh yeah.
Do you feel like you have to pop a Xanax after you watch this? Like, is that the type of like energy you're getting? And you're like, I can't. I just need more structure. I need to plan. I need, you know, a hard out at like this particular time.
Well, it's like, oh, it's, I don't know. It's just like, I want to know like what's still, okay. I know that what's coming up next, like with Survivor, you know, okay, they set the reward challenge. They're going to go back. They're going to have the immunity challenge. Like there's so little structure to it. I did one of the episodes. I did see Brian Malarkey was a judge. So that's one of the nice things I liked about Triple G.
Yeah, I saw the one that I watched. Mr. Blaze was a judge. I know he appears many a time on these shows.
Antonia's always on it too, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. Though I think she was on one of the episodes I watched. And so just reporting back, so the Food Network does have a list of all restaurants featured on Diners, Drives, and Dives, but it's a list and not searchable by location. There's a website called Diners, Drive-ins, Dives, Locations.com that lists all of the locations by state and city, but not by episode. So you can't see the review. And then, of course, FlavortownUSA.com looks like it lists when the episode aired. You can search by location when the episode aired, but it doesn't like give you the name of the episode that I can see.
So what you're saying is that this is a call to synthesize all of this data appropriately and organize it.
Right. There's also TV.
That's what we do next, guys.
I think that's the thing, you know, infamously there is a Lost compendium called Chronologically Lost, which takes all the events from all the episodes and puts them in chronological order. I think someone needs to make a Triple D edit organized by city and state. And so you could just refer to that particular set of segments depending on the city you want to select.
Because I do want to say, it's like, I think people, even people that are like really close to me, have a misconception that I like just like nice food. It's like, and one of my favorite things is just a quarter pounder with cheese from freaking McDonald's. I mean, I'm by no means have like pretentious tastes. And Haley will be familiar with the kind of the phrase from The Sporkful. It's like, it's not for foodies, it's for eaters. And that's like, I don't consider myself a foodie, but I definitely consider myself an eater. It's like, I will go the full gamut. I mean, I freaking make beans and ground beef every other week. It's by no means high level taste.
And so and it's so funny to me because like, Kurt, I really do feel like you and I have the same approach to food, which is that,
yeah,
we like it. We like making it. We don't consider ourselves experts in any means. So it's funny how we have these like opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, it's really funny like that you guys aren't going to be friends after this.
Yeah, we're watching a friendship fall apart before our eyes. Like a nice burger falls apart in your mouth when you take a big bite of it.
I can't wait for in 2024 when I can again travel to LA and we can go to a nice Triple D restaurant together, Kurt, and we'll have a great time.
It's like I do have a listing of the ones that are near me. I just now I can't go back and like appreciate the Triple D take on them. And but I'd have to I think cross reference.
You don't like the idea of a funky little joint that you'd like to check out? Like
there's something you will experience, I think, when you also binge Triple D's is the vernacular that guy likes to use over and over again, like that's the bomb or the bomb.com.
You're so upset, Kurt. You're so upset by it. This is triggering for you.
Even on, I thought I could get away from Flavortown references when we got to Guy's Ranch Kitchen, and no, it was still there.
So you're upset that I've called this podcast Flavortown. You know, I like named this entire recording Flavortown, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it is what it is. He definitely has his go-to phrases. I wonder if that's how the episode's like. This is the one where he says, like, you know, boom a lot. I don't know. I'm intrigued by like also like he's got his kids Hunter and Ryder were in the episodes I watched, and I'm like he names his kids after like actions, like you're a hunter, you're a rider.
And actually because I did see the Guy Fieri episode pop up in my feed of The Sporkful, and he has a winery now and it's called Hunt and Ride, which is after his kids.
Oh my god, it all comes full circle. I randomly read something about Guy Fieri about how he was born Guy Fieri, but when he got married, he chose to change his last name in honor of his Italian grandfather, who upon coming to Ellis Island had to like anglicize his last name, as many people did, from fiery to fairy. So he's like, I'm gonna honor my grandfather. So again, like, as much as people might poke fun at him for being like, you're not really Italian, you're a blonde, spiked, sunglass, backwards wearing douche. It's like, well, actually, he changed his name to that to actually honor someone who came before it. So there's more depth to it than you might think.
So yeah, I'm looking at an article called Guy Fieri Slang 101, How to Talk Like the Mayor of Flavortown. I would say some of my favorite phrases so far are put it on a flip flop.
Oh, yeah. The sauce is so good. You put it on a flip flop.
That's so amazing. Like, I need that in a t-shirt. Kurt is like going to have an aneurysm listening to it.
Serve it on a trash can lid. That puts the Shama-Lama in Ding Dong. And then let's see, one more. Let's give you one more. Hot frisbee of fun.
What does that mean?
That was my nickname in college, actually.
Is that also like put it on a flip-flop? Like you can put it on a frisbee and you can eat it? Or
luckily, an example is
probably a pizza, right?
Phrase. So the example given in this particular instance is, these cheesy pork fat pancakes are a hot frisbee of fun coming straight for your dome, muchacho.
I think any round food, I'm guessing you could apply that one too.
Yeah.
Like the cookies I made were just several like adorable little hot frisbees of fun. It's I don't know what else to say.
Put it on a flip flop.
Yeah.
The thing about Guy is that, again, the way he speaks does feel like he was unfrozen from the year 1998. But again, that weirdly enough, that has a way to be like, yeah, you're kind of looking and talking weird, but like that makes me more comfortable speaking about my food.
It's like he's harnessed the Smash Mouth energy, but been able to like ride that wave so much further than virtually everybody else from that time.
There was an article I read that basically had said, you know, if you don't like Smash Mouth, you probably don't like Guy Fieri. I don't think he's a douche. He's got
that's
this,
what I was worried about. I was worried that you thought he was a bad dude.
I'm
glad that we all agree that he's a good dude. He's just not, his TV style just like isn't what you're going for.
He's got the bro energy that I can tolerate, but that I don't vibe with.
I think that's all fair and reasonable.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well, is I believe reading up on Triple D, the Food Network said that like not only is it obviously a huge hit for the network and made Guy the face of the Food Network, but I believe like it's one of the most watched shows by the male side of their viewership. So for some reason, I think it's just Guy's particular energy and his style really has that vibe with like young men. I don't think this means that we're, you know, recruiting people to Flavortown anytime soon, but for some reason his typical way of being Guy like really resonates with men viewing these shows.
So this is interesting. I'm trying to think of like the algorithm of like Food Network programming now that you've said that. So we have that versus Pioneer Woman, which is like the safest, most vanilla American thing you could play.
I can't even watch that show because it's too boring. Like, like a lot of the times, like the way, like, you know, we'll have minutes of something on our DVR right before or like after. Mm-hmm. So we'll be watching something because Triple D and all this stuff is like shows Ethan and I will watch together. Like he'll get mad if there's like a tournament of Triple G on and like I watch one episode without him. Like that's like our Game of Thrones, basically. Like I'm not kidding. Like I cannot watch that show without him. So, you know, sometimes we'll watch like 10 minutes of Pioneer Woman after and we're just like, this is horrific. And I feel the same about
everybody,
Nancy.
Somebody feed Phil. Same thing. Sorry.
Yeah, I won't.
I'm scared to drag everybody.
Nancy. Oh, my God. Is it Nancy Fullerton?
I don't even know who that is.
What are you talking about?
I think she's an agent. I think she's in my HR team.
Nancy Fuller.
Fullerton is a chef.
That's what I... No, yeah, oh, no, I like Nancy Fullerton.
Rules.
Yes, I don't like Farmhouse Rules. I like Nancy Fullerton. Mm-hmm. I don't like Nancy Fullerton.
Sort of like their response to being like, we need someone who looks exactly like Paula Deen, but is a lot less risky.
Yeah. Read like, racist.
Yeah, exactly. And then we have, like, who else do we have? Like, Trisha Yearwood every once in a while.
Yeah, you know what? I like the chaotic energy. I can sit and watch Rachel Ray because she has some chaotic energy. Well,
Rachel and Guy are like, I feel like they're Food Network Biffles. Because again, like you said, they both have like that high bombastic type of energy.
Mm-hmm. That's great for me, I think. I like that.
Guys, should we do a ranking of like Food Network personalities real quick? I feel like that's a thing to
or is that a so whole episode?
Do you count though, like, because I'm trying to think, like, do you count people who do cooking shows? Because like we talked about Bobby Flay last week. Does he count even though he doesn't have a cooking show?
Did I ever tell you guys I have a subscription to Food Network Magazine?
I used to. I had one. My grandmother bought me one when I first moved to New York. And I think I got like two magazines in the mail and then it stopped.
I personally love it. It's a great time for me.
Huh.
I get lots of ideas from it. And it's all things that are so accessible. And I am basic and I like things that I feel like I can do.
If we are ranking Food Network personalities, I think the bottom for me might have to be Giada. For some reason,
today, Mike. She just turned 50. How
congratulations. She and I are birthday neighbors, but I don't know. I'm just not a fan of Giada De Laurentiis for whatever reason. Maybe it's because I've been so hampered by watching her on Food Network Star, where just like I vehemently disagree with the judging that she and Bobby put out there. And she also comes across as like, I know she reps all Italian cuisine, but she's sort of sounds like that one person who studied abroad in Spain for a semester and says how much she enjoyed Barcelona. Like the way she says these Italian things is like a little icky. So I sort of have this like weird axe to grind with her for probably no particular reason.
No, but I think a lot of people feel that way. I think that that's been the critique for an extraordinarily long time is like how she is like trying to be as authentic as possible and speaking Italian. So she says Italian words with an Italian accent, but you know, to each their own, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's see. Like people like Valerie Bertinelli, do we call them into question on this stuff?
Or Brian Boitano.
Yeah. Tia Mowry. Like, or is that Cooking Channel? I don't know.
No, that's true. I think it's all within the same thing. And then do you bring in like, and I guess you have to then incorporate like all of the Food Network star winners that became like Eddie Jackson,
Melissa D'Arabian,
Artie.
What's her name? Damaris.
Yeah, Damaris.
Yeah, Damaris.
I saw her at an airport in France a couple of years ago. She was like walking by. She looked.
We
very
get it.
Happy.
You've been to France. I'm like, no, just kidding.
Not going anytime soon. let's see. Who else?
I've heard that residents of New York can now travel to Costa Rica.
great.
Don't know if it's advised, but I think it's a possibility now.
What about people like Aaron McCargo Jr.? Like, what happened to him? The Neelys now split, not together.
Oh yeah, the Neelys. I forgot about the Neelys.
Yeah.
What about the girl from NCIS and her Italian husband?
Oh, you mean Debbie Mazar?
I think maybe.
That's not the girl from NCIS. That's Debbie Mazar.
Which I know.
Are you thinking of the girl with the bangs? Yeah.
You're going to sit here and tell me that they don't.
No, I think you're talking about. No, Haley Steinfeld.
One got 25
virgin,
years
right?
on the other.
Yeah, exactly.
Debbie Mazar is who I mean.
Yeah, she has a show on the Cooking Channel called Extra Virgin with her husband, Gabriel Corcos.
Yeah. Yes.
Gabrielle.
So what do I know?
These are all names I don't know. I'm so ignorant when it comes to the Food Network and Cooking Channel. I know Alton Brown.
One show of every single person in the next week, and then we all get together and talk about it next week.
I know Alton Brown.
Yeah.
And by the way, the Art Smith I was thinking of was Jonathan Waxman. I just drew a blank on the first name, and it was like
My God, that's so good.
The episode I watched of Guy's Ranch Kitchen was season one, episode three, where he brings some of his most creative chef friends to the ranch to revamp retro dishes.
Jonathan Waxman is so funny. He's a good dude. I used to go to his restaurant in the West Village before it shut down, and then he just reopened it as COVID happened. Mm. So, like, I'm
oh no,
to see what happens with that. But he has this great restaurant called Barbudo that was like sort of like this iconic. Like, he makes this like delicious roast chicken, and then you can get like Parmesan fried potatoes with it. It was always like a hot spot. You sit outside. Bobby Flay and Michael Simon used to go there all the time with their wives before Bobby got divorced from Stephanie March. One night I'm there. They're like racking up a crazy bill, wine bottles passed. I'm like two tables over with three of my girlfriends.
Did they tip 30% at least?
I hope so. They were like having a great time. And Jonathan Waxman starts coming around talking to everybody at every table. And he was like, ladies, how are you enjoying your meal? And we're like, oh, it's so good. And like, you know, my friends are like, they don't know who he is, like whatever. And I was like, that's the chef. Like, he's a really big deal. And they were all like, I think he just wanted to say hi to like four young women in their 20s, like in like summer dresses, eating like roast chicken. I was like, yeah, probably, but like still. And then I watched him like come around and like hang out with Bobby and Michael for a while. It was such a great night. It was very silly. I really enjoyed that moment. Anyway, I digress. But
in my mini binge of the Guy Fieri filmography on TV. I think I saw, and maybe it's just stuck in my mind because of how much you guys talked about Bobby Flay last week and Beat Bobby Flay, is like they were heavily promoting Chopped : Beat Bobby Flay, yeah. Which I guess is that a mashup of the two shows?
I'm going to assume so. But speaking of guests, when I was watching the Triple D episode, I watched had a Duff Goldman on as yes. well. Mm-hmm. I remember I watched a good amount of Ace of Cakes back in the day, even though I realized that that was not really a food show whatsoever. It was a fondant show dressed up as a food show. It was, hey, let's put fondant on stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That, I mean, that's a lot of work, but still.
it blended in more on like, I don't know, even like a Bravo, like more about craftsmanship than it was about the actual food itself.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, what if we talked about Ina Garten next week?
Oh.
Like, what if we just like really delve in there?
Who? I know, barefoot contestant.
We have a group chat.
Everybody. I know that we had, yeah, we brought this
and
up
I
in the past.
I sent a gif of Ina Garten, which is like, you know, pretty much like knock it out of the park. Like, you know, that's a gif that everybody knows. And Kurt was like, I don't know who that is. And I almost was like, I don't know where, what.
I don't know who you are, Kurt.
Who am I? If you don't know who Ina Garten is this an alternate reality? Like, I don't know. I just feel like, Kurt, you don't even know the fact that like her theme song was like really fast at first, like a really great sort of like yeah, where you're like, I gotta get to her house. And then it slowed down for a little while in like later seasons, and you're like, I don't know if I feel great about this.
And you don't know if she's making something for Jeffrey or not.
Her
and
husband, like, Jeffrey.
And like all of her tips of like roasted nuts and Parmesan crisps. And like, you know, how do your guests not leave absolutely smashed every time? Because that's not enough to support a cocktail party.
There's a theory that Meghan Markle and Prince Harry got engaged after making her roast chicken recipe.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, it's that good.
Yeah, it's an engagement chicken.
Mm-hmm. I'm just realizing this now. It's like, it's rare for me to jump on a show that's been on air for several seasons already. Most shows that I watch, I start watching because they're new shows. And so I think so there's very few shows where I have a huge bet. Like, I think I could be wrong. I think, you know, many of us have those shows where, well, you know what, I'm going to throw this bit to the DVR. And then like, you know, a week later, there's 117 in your DVR. Then you can like remove it from the DVR and you've got this catalog. You can go, for me, it's not cooking shows that are like that. It's like ghost hunting shows. It's like, strangely, like every October 1st, I'll throw in like Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, Ghost Haunted, Most Haunt, whatever. And like, then a week later, I'll have like 230 ghost hunting shows on my DVR. I'll remove it. And then I'll surf on that through December. And I think, there's something intimidating to me about like, okay, there's a show. I'm a kind of a completionist. I like to watch, if I enjoy something, I want to watch all of it. And so it's like, I'm hesitant to start new shows that have a huge backlog.
That, but I think you're so used to watching shows that are like episodic and you need to like follow the stream. But like this shit, you just turn on, you could watch like 15 minutes of the full hour of it and you're like, yes, I'm wonderful. But I get that this is not your style.
Yeah, I don't think it's not the episodic. I like there's episodic shows that I do like. I say episodic to me is like it's confined to a single episode versus serialized, which is spread over several. But regardless, it's like I do think I do tend to prefer things that have a continuous story. But it's like I did enjoy, Iron Chef, and I caught that like early on in its run and the concept of it. So it's more just the even for. I just put off watching Schitt's Creek forever because I was like, five seasons behind. And then I finally say, okay, you know what? I have enough people in my life who are talking about this now for some reason. And I like watched like the first five episodes and I'm hooked. So it's.
You were fine with Taskmaster.
Yes, I was. Because, but that was also like, but I'm watching them in order. And because you kind of want to. But I think it's. And those are short seasons. Come on, there's not like 31 seasons and 300 plus, episodes.
What if we had you watch one show that's like food related, that's like food networky, doesn't have to be Guy. What do you guys think would be like cart? Like, I don't know, like the palate cleanser, the way to really like.
Yeah, I was saying. Well, I mean, do you want it to be something that Kurt enjoys?
Yeah, like what is it?
Instead of Shark Tank, this is like Clark Tank, where you're.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. I think to Kurt talked about his love of Alton Brown. I think Good Eats would be.
I did not love. It's like he's the one I'm familiar like in terms of Food Network personalities.
I can't stand that show. I hate that show.
Yeah, I know him as a name, as a food personality. I don't have a love for Alton Brown.
It's like a very talk about chaotic. We want to talk about how horrifying the camera angles are on that.
Yeah, they're very close in and very angular.
No, I'm not here to see your pores, man. I'm here to see what you're baking. I'm mad about that. Sorry.
Good Eats is sort of like I think because if you're talking about like accessibility and like things I can cook, basically what Alton does is every episode of Good Eats, he like breaks down a food. Or like an idea, talks about the science behind it a bit, and then ends up making something, which feels like very much up your alley. I'm trying to think if there's like, I mean, obviously, if you're talking about like competition, I think Food Network Star would probably be a big one.
Because
that's a fun combination of like competition, but they're supposed to be judged equally between like camera personality and cookery. So I think that's a good mashup as well. So it's like a little Top Chef-y, but it also combines like, hey, are you talented enough to be able to talk about food in front of a camera?
What about like Worst Cooks in America?
I tried that. I tried it might have been the Alex Stein the season from Glass House.
But
someday it did it. I don't think I finished that. Like I will typically give it used to be I would give any show six episodes. And before I dumped it, now Haley, it's kind of down to three now. But
Haley, what do you think? Like, what's like a Food Network show that like Kurt could handle?
God, I'm trying to think because. I think it's also really telling. Want, like an instructional one, like one that's like today we're making this. Like my friend Bev is coming over later, and she loves tomatoes, so we're making a tomato feast.
God, Bev's coming over in her finest linen.
Is this a Barefoot Contessa reference?
Oh my God. Like, yeah, I actually, okay. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to have you watch an episode of Barefoot Contessa, maybe five. I'm not
can
sure.
We can you like, God, I wish there was a way that we could just like all watch the same episode of Barefoot
Contessa. Yeah, we can. We did with Taste the Nation. We watched like, them together.
Yeah. I want you to get a feel for Ina. I want you to enjoy her guests, whomever they are. I want you to tell us how you feel about Jeffrey. Truly. I think that this is next week. I think this is what we're going to do.
All right. And well, here's what we can do. We can watch them together, or I'm going to put in our chat here and everyone can look it up as well. There's an eater.com article that says Ina Garten's most fabulous moments on Barefoot Contessa. And it lists, I believe, a handful of Barefoot Contessa episodes to watch. I think it's very easily skim a few off the top here. We can watch and we can talk about them.
Well, you have to be able to find them to watch them.
And that's something I've taken issue with, Kurt, you're going to need
to take up Hulu eventually, because a lot of these shows are available on Hulu.
Kurt, what we're trying to do is make you as uncomfortable as possible in like your exploration of food shows you've never watched before, and also paying for networks that you don't want to pay for.
I have like...
Someone just give Kurt your password. Like,
I've got Prime. I've got HBO Max. I've got Netflix. I mean, I just don't need to add Hulu on top of it.
It's totally get rid of HBO Max.
No. I will fight you, Mike Bloom.
Things are getting really intense and not in a way I expected. I thought it was just going to be between Haley and Kurt, and now Mike's been thrown into the mix.
With my anti-HBO Max takes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we should talk about Ina Garten. I think it's time.
I'm happy to do that.
I would love that. I can tell you virtually about anything having to do with her show. I've driven past her house multiple times. Anything you want, we can talk about.
I feel like next week it'll be like The Passion of Emily, like with Ina, as it was this week with me and Guy Fieri. Like, will you cry? That's debatable. I'm kind of a wussy little sucker who cries about everything.
But I'm prepared to cry about Ina Garten. Great. No problem. I've made her roast chicken.
There's 9 full episodes of Barefoot Contessa on foodnetwork.com.
Great.
They're about like 21-minute episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that they're highlighting is Jeffrey's birthday dinner.
Yeah.
where Ina birthday. Throws an Italian-themed birthday dinner with a surprise for Jeffrey.
Guys, since Josh isn't on this, should I make that meal for him?
Yes.
Let's do it. Okay, cool. I'm into it.
There is also a Cooking for Jeffrey : pizza episode.
There's a Cooking for Jeffrey cookbook. So there's a lot of that happening. But Kurt, just a quick spoiler. Jeffrey's not home all the time.
Okay.
It's an interesting arrangement they've got.
Mm-hmm.
You might learn more about this. You'll see.
I can't wait for you to meet.
There might be a florist in the picture. Yeah, exactly. The florist.
Frank. I also enjoy her friend JR. I think he's pretty great. But that's enough. Next week. Let's hold back.
It says, at least as of 2015, I tried pulling up Netflix, but the audio started playing back. It says season 1 of Barefoot Contessa : Back to Basics is currently streaming on Netflix. That's a 5-year-old article, so I don't know if it's still...
I doubt that it's there, but we could try. Yeah, I'll do a little digging. We'll find out what makes sense.
Let me go on mute for one moment.
Okay.
So he doesn't hear a bunch of audio back from Netflix looking at Ina Garten stuff.
I think he just really wants to hear the theme song that we're talking about. He's like, oh man, I gotta cue it up.
It's a rocking thing. Like, it'll get your motor running.
It used to be on my iPod and it would just come on and shut up.
You're listening to like your workout jams and then the Barefoot Contessa theme song comes on.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
It was the best. I finally took it off after like being like, oh God, no, it's too loud.
No, I mean, I personally feel like the Barefoot Contessa back when we had ringtones, because I feel like those have gone on the way of the way that HBO Max should be going in the next couple of years. It's a great text tone slash ringtone, because it's instrumental. Like, it's jovial, but it's not too like over in like just pulse pounding. It's a really, really indulging little ditty.
That basically sums up Ina Garten.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jovial. A little giggly.
Yeah, Kurt, I guess to preview Ina Garten, when Martha Stewart went to prison for insider trading, there were rumors that Ina Garten was going to like succeed her when it came to that type of show. So it's when if you're talking about like a very mildly spoken, soft focus type of TV show, that's Barefoot Contessa.
Yeah, I believe there's like a story. I'm going to have to actually look at the validity of this. But like Martha Stewart had gotten a copy of Ina Garten's book back in the day, like her first cookbook, and was like, oh, interesting. And like there was like sort of like a weird tension there. I don't know if it's that way anymore. But obviously, I love Martha, so like I was sort of like obviously going to love Ina as well.
I think people are just trying to pit some cooking women against each other, and that's BS.
Right. That's right. And oh my God, I could go down a whole rabbit hole with this stuff, but we'll wait until next week. This is my bread and butter. Like, this is what I live for.
Oh, that's straight donkey sauce. Before we get into what we're cooking, actually, here's a game I have. I currently have the recipe for donkey sauce from RachelRayShow.com. Between the two of you, there are six ingredients in donkey sauce. Can you guess all six?
What do you mean two of us?
Three. I don't know why I said two. Three.
Was it because I was muted for a full minute because I had the hiccups?
Or maybe I assumed that Kurt wouldn't want to participate because it's affiliated with Guy.
Can eggs. I start? Oh.
Sorry. That took
we'll go one at a time.
Guy Fieri hates eggs, so...
He does hate eggs.
I'm going vinegar.
There is no vinegar.
What?
Are there eggs?
There are no eggs. Emily?
Mayonnaise.
Yes, there is 1 cup of mayonnaise.
Wait, I said eggs because I thought mayonnaise was made with eggs.
I think we're distilling it to like this specific prepared ingredients.
Oh. So,
like, technically you get it right.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah. All right, Kurt, give me another guess.
Paprika.
No. Haley.
Ancho chilies.
No, unfortunately not. Emily.
I don't think it's spicy.
Worcestershire.
Yes, that is correct. 4 dashes of Worcestershire sauce.
Salt.
That's correct. 1/4 teaspoon of salt. Haley?
Acid.
Well, very, very true, but not technically corrected in a specific regard. Emily? We got three there. Three to go.
Garlic.
Yes, 1/4 cup of minced roast garlic.
Pepper. Right.
Yes, 4 pinches of black pepper. There's 1 ingredient left. Haley, what is it?
I don't know, man. I don't even know what the sauce
what do we
looks
have so
like.
Far? We've got salt, pepper, garlic, mayo.
So you got garlic, mayonnaise, Worcestershire sauce, salt, and pepper. There's 1 ingredient left for the secret ingredient to donkey sauce.
Love?
Donkeys.
If only. Not. It's neither love nor donkeys.
Lemon juice?
No. I'll give it to you. Yeah. It is mustard. So essentially what people figured out once Guy gave away this recipe is that donkey sauce is essentially aioli with mustard in it.
Right. They talked about that in the podcast, is like that it's basically, he says basically just aioli. You want to call it aioli? Fine. Call it aioli. I'm calling it donkey sauce.
I don't know why he calls it donkey sauce specifically. Like, it has no connection to, like, I guess maybe he meant that it has such a kick that I feel like a donkey, I don't know, gave you a swift shot to the jaw.
That's probably
to the jaw. Nice.
That's probably correct. Do you want to do the origin story of donkey sauce? Do you think that that's something we can look up?
Let's look it up. Did he talk about it on the podcast, Kurt?
Only Haley. I think he just talked about the fact the naming of it, and some people had the name, and yeah, it's basically
yeah. And he's like, yeah, it's aioli. Okay, it's aioli.
He revealed the origin story behind the term donkey sauce.
Oh, so here it goes. Fieri reveals, this is from eater.com, which I've been perusing a lot today. Fieri reveals in an interview with Las Vegas Magazine that the name donkey sauce was invented when he was working in the kitchens of a Carnival cruise ship. He says he explained to one of the chefs that, quote, you have to put sauce on the burgers or you're a jackass. The other chef, who has this really thick accent, asked Fieri, jackass? What is a jackass? After Fieri explained it was a donkey, the other chef noted, oh, so it's donkey sauce.
Wow.
Boom. That's when history happened and the world was changed forever. So no, it was less so about like the punch that a donkey gives you and more so about like, if you don't put sauce on this sandwich, you are a donkey.
So he's credited another chef deserves the credit for calling it that.
Yeah, this Carnival cruise chef created the term donkey sauce.
Unbelievable.
I think Gordon Ramsay will call people donkeys. You donkey!
Yeah, that sounds right.
So,
or Shrek.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Get it,
guys. That did kind of sound Scottish of me.
Yeah.
I really thought that's what you were going
for. Yeah, I realized after I said it. So,
anyway. So Kurt, what have you been making this week?
I had a meal kit this week. Had some decent chicken, some decent pork bowls. I think the big thing I wanted to, I had some great, Indian food last weekend, actually. I was going to go to the English pub. I think we talked about that, to pick up some food, but it wasn't, doing pickup orders till like 1 p.m. I was like, I know I'm going to be hungry for that. But just next to it was an Indian restaurant. And I can count on one hand how many times I've like gone to an Indian restaurant.
And I had recently been watching Final Table on Netflix, which is another one of the shows I didn't talk about last weekend, where each episode they focus on a different country and then somebody goes home. And the most recent episode I had watched with India was India, and they had made butter chicken. And actually one of the judges was vegetarian, so they had to make no chicken butter chicken. And I've never had butter chicken. And I had the butter chicken and the mango lassi and a kind of a side of just random assorted appetizers. It was amazing. I'm probably going to get it again this weekend. It was just so good. The other thing is we have a work function on Monday, this coming Monday. And we were all UPS'd these round cookies with frosting, kind of vacuum sealed and just like a thin layer of kind of white plain frosting on it. And an 8-pack of edible food coloring markers. And we have to decorate these cookies with what we want to do once COVID lifts. Like kind
that's,
of like,
that sounds like a challenge on the circle of like, here are these basic supplies.
Except we are going to be, and we were told, take a couple pictures and send it in so we can, share it. Like, and it's like, I'm just going to like hold my mine up. But you know, it's very much a circle challenge where you're given these blank slate cookies and these edible food coloring markers. And so that's something I'm actually kind of looking forward. When we were told we were getting some sort of like, you know, participatory arts and crafts sort of thing in the mail, I was like, but then I saw I think this is actually kind of cool and kind of fun. So I will, I'll be sure to post in the Patreon group what I end up making.
All right. Haley.
I haven't been making a lot. I can't even remember. My brain feels like it's fallen out of my ear hole. Last week, Ethan's best friend and his fiance had a baby, and then it was her birthday like 4 days later. So I made a mini cake.
Aww.
I want their favorite kind of cake is funfetti. So I wanted to try my hand at making a funfetti cake, but every recipe I could find was for a truly massive cake. Mm-hmm. And I do not have the skill set or pans for that. So I found a recipe for a mini one. And it was wildly mediocre. I'm just not good at cakes, I think, is my thing. It turned out a little dense and a little flat. So I really think that cakes are just not in my wheelhouse. And that's fine. I have other skills. I haven't found them yet, but I'm sure they're there deep down. And it was my first time making a buttercream, and it was a little grainy. Probably because I didn't use actual confectioner's sugar. I made my own.
How did you make your own?
You made your own confectioner's sugar?
You just ground it down?
Yeah, with a little bit of cornstarch. You just take regular sugar, a little cornstarch, blender.
Oh, I thought you meant you like assembled the sugar crystals to construct your own.
I am truly an idiot. You know that's not happening. Science is not... Again, the cake thing, it's because science is not really in my little brain sphere. Not good at it.
Speaking of cake, I went to if you're in the area, Wanderlust Creamery is an amazing ice cream place, and they're one of their August seasonal ice creams is Kievsky, which is based on the Kiev cake, and it's got layers of meringue and hazelnuts, chocolate glazed, and buttercream filling. But this was a buttercream ice cream, which I've never had before. Freaking amazing. It's like buttercream ice cream and chocolate covered hazelnuts. The ice cream was so good. So when you were talking about the buttercream frosting, it made me think of the buttercream flavored ice cream that I had this weekend. But I just wanted to throw that out there. Sorry.
Michael.
So it was my birthday week celebrating.
Happy birthday, Mike Bloom.
Thank you. Alongside Giada. So we treated ourselves a little bit. I'll stay on the cake train. Angela got a great cake from a local bakery that, you know, it was probably not worth the money it costs, but it was like a nice, you know, bakery, fresh cookies and cream, vanilla sponge cake. So it turned out really great. But the big thing is inside of ordering in, we finally went out to lunch in an actual restaurant, which was fun. And I had a short rib grilled cheese on two pieces of Texas toast. Yep. And oh, man. Oh, that was so good.
Did you take a nap after?
I mean, it was my birthday. So I was just like, oh, I'm going to nap. It's my birthday. I'm going to nap. I'm going to go into bed and you can't judge me, world. But yeah, it was like Vermont Cheddar, and just like everything about it was so, so good.
That sounds so good.
So that was definitely from a food perspective, like the highlight of my week, maybe even my month, just being able to have that short rib grilled cheese. Now I want it again, now that I've just mentioned it and it's conceptualized in my mind's eye.
I love short ribs so much. It's such a delicious cut.
It really is.
Yeah. It takes so much time to like render it down and like get it really tender. But once you do, you're like, cool. So I'll just live in this pot.
And that's the great thing about going out to rest or getting
my
food from other places.
Because now I want to eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you can be like, well, I'm not the one who made the same thing with like, that's why I love brisket is I don't like making brisket and having to keep things in there for like a week and a half. But being like, sure, you did the hard work for me. I'll have your brisket. Fine.
Sounds delicious.
Emily, qu'est-ce que tu as fait cette semaine?
Oh, this week I made a lot of things. I also made a cake, actually.
Yeah. Probably much better than my shit cake.
No, it was not a great cake. Josh would probably say it was. But I keep hate eating it because it's delicious, but I don't love how it looks.
Oh, interesting.
Emily, please, I must direct you now to my Twitter feed at HStrong on Twitter. Scroll down a bit so you can see the picture of this cake I made.
Okay, I'm looking right now.
The tweet is from August 11th because I actually made this cake on Twitch. You can follow me on Twitch, twitch.tv / Haley Strong.
Oh, that's interesting. Can you talk a little bit? What was your setup? Did you just like set up the camera like on the counter or something?
It was really
so cute.
It's so sad.
It's like a little brick. I love it.
Yeah, that's how it tasted too. And like, because it was so thin, that's two layers. I had to cut the cake in half and layer it because it was so thin. I had my iPad. I'm still trying to like, I'm not very technologically advanced. So I kind of set up.
Your photos are great, dude. Really
I'm good at photo. I'm not good at video. So I have my iPad like stacked on a couple cookbooks
you
and
just like someone's mom at their graduation being like, hold on.
Yeah. Basically, like I had the front facing camera and like you like couldn't you see what I was doing half the time.
It looks like you just placed it like in a stool that you had somewhere in your apartment.
Yeah, that's basically it was like a stack of cookbooks on my counter because the lighting in my kitchen's a little weird, too. So I need to figure out how to do that because I don't know. I just don't.
No. All right. Don't worry. We're all trying to do our best here.
But yeah, that is the cake I made. And it's adorable.
I like it. My cake sunk in the middle because I didn't put eggs in it because I can't eat eggs. I decided not to put an egg replacer in it.
I was going to say you didn't use the gross fake egg stuff that you guys get.
I was like, I don't feel like using this stuff. I was really like, stress baking more so, and I put too much sugar in with the butter, and so I had to very quickly pivot and add more of all the other ingredients, so I had to do a lot of math, and that was annoying. So like at that point I was just kind of like, this cake's gonna be what it's gonna be, and I'm not gonna put like fake eggs in it, and like we'll see what happens. And like, listen, we've been eating it slowly the last couple of days. It's a red velvet with cream cheese frosting. Let me tell you, it's ridiculously good, but it's ugly. And I didn't have the right oil for it, so I put olive oil in it, so it crisped up on the sides, which is not really what you want for a cake, typically, but actually adds a lot of like interesting texture. But on to my successes. I made a mushroom risotto.
Mm.
I made a tomato tart with like a
very Philadelphia of you.
Butter crust underneath it in a tart pan so that it looked really good, actually. It was like perfect for the gram. And then I forgot to take a picture. I made a bolognese. I made meatballs, guys.
Nice.
I've been making a lot of food because like in times of like stress, that's all I really know what to do with myself. Like like my apartment's very clean and I have a lot of food in the fridge now. So like that's great.
I forgot we made tomato sauce this week. Ooh. Our neighbor had an excess of tomatoes that they gave us, and we made some tomato sauce, and it was very nice and tasty.
Yeah, I love making fresh tomato sauce. When like the tomatoes are as good as they've been this year, it's so worth your while to just do it if you can.
We now have 5 bags of tomato sauce in the freezer that we can, like, we separated it that, like, it's a good portion for the two of us, and so now we can just be like, hello, bag.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, good week of eating, you know.
Right. So, everyone, where can they find you on the internet?
I'm at Kurt Clark with two C's on most of your major social media platforms.
Emily.
I am at Emilet, like an omelet, but with an E, on Twitter and Instagram.
Mikel.
I'm at a Mike Bloom type, doing a lot of podcasts, including covering for Josh, who's in absentia this week, including on this podcast over on Post Show Recaps, as well as all the other reality TV based stuff, including having our very own Haley Strong on the RHAP B&B starting in about like half an hour from now.
Whoop, whoop.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at astrong_. You can check out my blog, strongtakes.ca. You can check out my coverage of The Bachelor Greatest Seasons of All Time. That's on pause this week. But we talked about The Bachelor Australia with Shannon Gates last week, and that was wonderful. I'm going to be on the RHAP BB&B this week, so that's going to be fun. Yeah, I think that's it. You know. Cool. You know where to find us. You've been listening to, if you're listening to the Guy Fieri episode of Beyond Top Chef podcast and you've made it to this point, you know where to find us. Anyway, pack your knives and go. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Goodbye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.